This is the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast brought to you by Art Wiederman, CPA with Ide Bailey. Whether it's taxes and investing or planning wisely, Art is the expert to make your dental practice profitable. At Ide Bailey, what inspires you inspires us. We provide a suite of accounting and advisory services dedicated to the total care of your practice. Visit our website to access our tools and resources tailored for dentists, idebailey.com/dentist. That's idebailey.com/dentist. This podcast is distributed with the understanding that Art Wiederman, CPA, and Ide Bailey, LLP are not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Listeners should consult with their business advisors before acting on any of the information or opinions shared. If you have questions and or feedback, make sure to email Art over at awiederman@idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. You can also give Art a call at 657-279-3243. Without further delay, here's your host, Dental CPA Art Wiederman.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. I'm your host, Art Wiederman. I am a proud dental division director at the CPA firm of Ide Bailey, located in Southern California in Orange County. And I am really excited to have one of my dear, dear friends that I have known for well over 20 years back on the podcast. As all of you know, one of the biggest challenges that dental practices are having after the pandemic has been, keeping and retaining employees. And that especially goes for the hygiene department. And my guest today is the founder and CEO of Inspired Hygiene, my good friend, Rachel Wall. And there is nobody in America who knows and understands the hygiene space in a dental office like Rachel. The numbers speak for themselves. Rachel's company has been working with hygienists for over 20 years. They've served clients in 45 states plus Canada. Over 200 years of combined dental hygiene experience with Rachel and her dental team. Rachel has, and I'll introduce her in a minute, and over 90 years of collective experience coaching and educating dentists and dental offices. I have seen her manuals, which we're going to talk about. We're going to talk today about what's going on in hygiene. How is hygiene bouncing back after the pandemic? And some of the things that Rachel sees in offices, and we're going to give you some really, really good things to take back to your teams, because that's what this podcast is all about, folks. First, a couple of announcements. First, want to let all of you know that we are going to be, I'm going to be speaking in February at the Chicago Midwinter Meeting on which is the 19th to the 21st. So if you are at the Chicago meeting, which if you've never been, it's a pretty awesome experience, come by and say hi. Also want to thank my wonderful partner, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com. They have 140 CE courses at a very reasonable price and the best clinical content on the planet. That's www.decisionsindentistry.com. If you are looking for a dental CPA, you just finished October 15th. You got a big surprise on October 13th. We're right now coming into year-end tax planning season. In fact, one of our last podcasts of the year is going to be myself and my cohort, Don Watson, who's a partner at Ide Bailey in our dental division, talking about the One Big Beautiful Bill Act and year-end tax planning. Give me a call at 657-279-3243. Or email me at awiederman, that's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N, at idebailey.com. I'm going to make one more comment before I bring on my good friend Rachel Wall. I just came back from Nashville, Tennessee, attending my twice-a-year Academy of Dental CPA meeting. And if you're not working with a dental CPA, whether it's Ide Bailey or the other 24 firms that we have in the ADCPA, you really need to. The learning that we get is just unbelievable. We had a speaker who owns a cybersecurity company. I will tell you, I've been to, we've almost had 50 meetings at the ADCPA. I have never seen any meeting where everybody put their phones down and the room was silent. He was telling stories about cybersecurity and how the bad guys from overseas hacked one of their clients and held them for ransom. And it cost that client almost $7 million. Mm. I would strongly urge you, if you are not working with a cybersecurity expert, and folks, I don't know much about computers other than how to turn them on. But what I will tell you is, if you come back and someone talks to you about cybersecurity and you say, well, my IT guy is handling it, they are not. And that is absolutely 100% true. And if you need resources, I've got them for you. The story he told had our jaws hanging. So if you are not working with a cybersecurity expert to lock down your software and your hardware and your computer system, you need to do that right now.
Be sure to check out our new Ide Bailey podcast, Ebb and Flow, a business podcast providing inspired insight on issues and trends the middle market faces. Hear unique business stories, get answers to frequently asked and unasked questions, and understand business topics that matter to you. Available now on your favorite podcast platform.
All right. Enough said about cybersecurity. Let me introduce my wonderful, wonderful friend, Rachel Wall. Again, as I said, founder and CEO of Inspired Hygiene. Inspired Hygiene is a company that is committed to helping dentists tap into hygiene profit potential through coaching, webinars, mastermind groups, and more. She's a national speaker, hygiene consultant, helps dental teams to build highly productive hygiene departments by creating and implementing systems for high-quality periodontal care, enrolling restorative care through hygiene, and managing the logistics of a high-performance team. And Rachel has, like I said, she's spoken for numerous groups and events, RDH Under One Roof, the American Association of Cosmetic Dentistry annual session. She's been written for and featured in numerous industry publications, such as Dentistry Today, Progressive Dentist, RDH, Hygiene Town. And she's actually a really, really nice lady. So welcome, Rachel Wall, to the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast.
Thank you so much, Art, for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Rachel, you are in Charlotte, North Carolina, last I checked.
Yes.
Go Tar Heels?
Go Tar Heels.
And you told me that you and your husband are both graduates of the University of North Carolina?
We are. And now our daughter is there. So that's exciting. And it's been fun kind of seeing it through her eyes.
Well, I tell you what, I've been to Tobacco Road and it is absolutely, absolutely beautiful. So let's jump into our discussion here. Tell us a little bit about your professional journey and kind of how you got to be at Inspired Hygiene. I know you were a hygienist for a long time. Tell us about your history.
Yeah. I've been a hygienist. In 2026, it'll be 35 years that I graduated from hygiene school. So that's a little crazy. And have seen a lot as you have, Art, as well in this industry, and lots of different ups and downs and changes. And it's been fantastic. I'm so grateful to have been, to be in dentistry this long and dental hygiene specifically. In the year 1997-ish, 1998, 99, I discovered dental coaching. I was a team member in a very progressive practice, and we had a coach. And I really enjoyed that experience and thought to myself, man, that's something that I might like to do one day. And so I started studying under a coach, and one thing led to another. She actually helped me get hired by another hygiene consulting firm. And that was a great experience, got some great training, and then had an opportunity to start my own business. So in 2004, I started Inspired Hygiene. And for probably the first half of, we've been in business now for 21 years. And so for the first 10 years or so, I also worked hygiene every week. I was in a practice 1 to 2 days a week, every week while I was You know, I'd do hygiene Monday and Tuesday, and then I was on the road many weeks, speaking and, you know, working with clients and just trying to build this business. And at the same time, around that time, I had two kids. So it was super busy. And, but, you know, I was able to build some great relationships, and Inspired Hygiene has just grown from there with a lot of gratitude to, our industry partners, many of which are in the ADCPA, as you mentioned, as well as the coaches and the team members that have worked with us at Inspired Hygiene over the years. And so just really happy to have been able to do what we do and continue to do what we do for teams and just helping them develop and grow and support their hygiene team.
Well, we're going to talk about the importance of hygiene. And one of the things over 41 years as a dental CPA, Rachel, is I just don't get the feeling that there are enough dentists who take the hygiene department serious enough.
Yeah.
And so we're going to talk all about that. So let's get into our discussion here.
Okay.
You know, we all know that there was a flight of not only hygienists, but dental assistants and dental employees after the COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, it's hard to believe that we are, what, 5.5 years past the pandemic. Time flies when you're having fun. So I found an article, Rachel, in the Journal of Dental Hygiene that said that after the pandemic, that about 8% of hygienists had left the profession, and that about half of those folks have returned. Can you kind of give us an update on the state of dental hygienists? Are they returning? Is it back to where it was pre-pandemic? Where are we with hygienists and the numbers and in the profession?
Yeah, no, we are not back to where we were pre-pandemic. I don't expect we're going to be back there anytime soon. And part of the reason for that is, and I will say, based on that statistic, Art, I mean, there's another statistic that, you know, came out kind of soon after the pandemic that was more like 15% left. Half of those came back. So, you know, I'm not sure if we have some really clear data on that. What I will tell you that I've observed is that, I would say a much higher percentage even than that have changed the way that they are working. So a lot of hygienists have, even if they're still in the profession, a lot of them are, aren't working as many days. This is my anecdotal opinion around that is that, you know, when they're making a higher wage, they can afford to maybe work a day less, spend more time with their family. Hygienists are looking for more flexibility. So we're encouraging our practice owners that we engage with to be open and flexible with job sharing and different ways for hygienists to work and be a part of their practice. So I think that I don't know that we're ever going to go back to the way that it was pre-pandemic. And, you know, some of the things and changes that have happened are for the better. Some of them are still very frustrating. You know, working with teams that have had a difficult time finding hygienists, it certainly has impacted the, I would say, you know, mental and business well-being of a lot of dental professionals. And it's also impacted the healthcare of a lot of patients because patients are not able to get in for the care that they need in a timely manner in a lot of instances. So I would say the update is that more hygienists are looking for flexible work options. They're absolutely looking for benefits. And that was something that I think wasn't requested as frequently in the past as it is now. It is a general expectation now. And I think that the dentist practice owners that are having the most success in hiring and retaining team members are embracing where we are today, rather than waiting for us to get back to where we were pre-pandemic, because that's going to take some time and it may not ever happen.
So let's jump into that topic as far as some good tips.
Yeah.
Is how can we attract dental hygienists, and especially in non-metropolitan areas where there are just not as many of them as there are in, you know, Charlotte, Atlanta, Los Angeles, New York. So give us some tips about what you are suggesting, maybe how we looked for hygienists in the past and what we're looking for. And now, you know, you mentioned a little bit about benefits, but what are some of the things that our doctors should be doing to attract, to get hygienists to come and look at their practices and then to get them to join their team?
Yeah. So first thing I'll do is just point everybody to a resource on our website on inspiredhygiene.com. There's a drop down that is free resources. And there is a guide. It's called 17 Tips to Attracting a Hygienist. So grab that. And then I'll talk through a few of those things here with the audience. So the first thing I would say is that it's really important now for teams to always be recruiting. And so a lot of times dental practice owners or office managers will say, well, I don't want my existing team to see an ad out there because they might feel threatened or they might feel like we're going to let them go or something like that. Just communicate to your team. Say, hey, you know what? In this environment that we're in now, where it could take us 6 months to a year to find somebody, we have got to be proactive, and we are always looking for ways that our practice can grow, and we're always looking for great new team members. So if you see an ad out, don't get nervous about it. Just know that we are always looking to add amazing team members to our team. And we want to just be able to have that opportunity. And you also don't ever know when something's going to change in somebody's life. I mean, every dentist that has been in practice more than a couple years has had, you know, somebody that goes out on maternity leave and says they're coming back and then they decide not to. People move. Job, you know, spouses' jobs change. People make different life decisions. And that's just part of, you know, being an employer. There are going to be transitions there. So always have active ads out there. You just don't ever know. And if you get a contact from somebody that's amazing and you don't have space for them right now, just say, you know what? We don't have an open position right now, but we'd love to be able to stay in touch. You know, can we keep your resume on file? And, you know, what's the best way to contact you? And if you ever have another change, like reach out to us too. So it's also a way to just build your network. So that would be one thing, is just really staying active with that. The other thing I would say is utilize your social media. So I'm recording a podcast tomorrow that will be out before the end of this year, before the end of 2025, with one of our good friends, Rita Zamora. And
love Rita.
Yeah, and an additional friend of mine and social media expert, Sarah Ruberg. So they're both going to share, like, what do we need to double down on with social media going into 2026 and beyond? And really their marketing in general. And it is that teams have to market for team just like you have to market for your patients. So you really have to be proactive. Get those ads or get some kind of post or something that you're hiring on your social media, on all your social media. Your team knows that you have, I mean, your patients know that from time to time you have changes in your team, that you are growing your team. But we have had multiple clients tell us, hey, when you told us to put that we were hiring on our social media, guess what? We found somebody. And we'd never thought to do that before. So get that information out on your social media. Let your patients know. They might have a niece or a nephew that's moving to the area that's a dental hygienist. We've seen that happen. So really look at that. I would say the other thing, Art, is just to make sure that your ads are really attractive and they're pulling people towards your practice. So don't waste the real estate in an ad on, you know, you need to be able to take radiographs and to, you know, be proficient in sterilization. Like, hygienists know that.
We know this. We know all of this.
Exactly. They know that. That does not need to be in an ad. What you really want to point out is what is unique about your practice? What do you have to offer? And really craft something that will be very compelling. And we work with our clients to help them do that as well. So those are just a few tips, but there's more on that 17 tips guide. But it's a new age. And the other thing I will say is if you can get your, I'll give an example. We were working with a client in Virginia a few years back and they were looking for a hygienist and they crafted this ad and I looked at it and I said, hey, I don't see here that you guys take a week off every 6 weeks and that your team members have an enormous amount of time off. And they're like, oh gosh, we didn't even think about that. So
right.
Like really ask your team members, what is it about working in this practice that you really love? And if you can capture that on a 30-second video and have that on your social media or somewhere on your website that potential candidates can come to, that makes a big difference too. So my point in that is there was a huge, this practice closed every 6 weeks for a week. And so they had a lot of flexible time off, but it didn't even show up anywhere in their ad. And that's something to me that would be very attractive. So just really like dig deep and see what are the things that are really neat about your practice and get it out there.
So if this hygiene company thing doesn't work out for you, you can give advice on social media too and marketing. And it sounds, I mean, that's the thing. You know so much about so much. We could spend days, you and I talking. Absolutely. That's great tips. And again, if you go onto their website, which is inspiredhygiene.com, there's blogs, there's lots of articles, there's just so much really cool stuff. We'll talk about that in a little bit. So I know, Rachel, you know, we've talked before, you believe that 50% of hygiene success happens outside of the hygiene department. And this comes from leadership from the top. Let's start with that. Talk about, and again, doctors, if you're going to say, oh my God, all you ever talk about, Art, is leadership. Yeah, that's right. That's not changing. That's not going away. Leadership is key. Talk about where the leadership needs to come from and how it should happen.
Yeah, that's a great, we always talk about leadership because that's what drives everything, right? There's a quote, this just came to my mind and it's kind of graphic, but there's a quote from, I think it's from Good to Great, that says the fish rots from the head. So, I mean, you kind of know where we're going with that, right?
Yep.
If there are culture problems in the practice, if there are people that are acting up in the practice, if they're not following your standards of care, right? It leaders, you've got to look in the mirror. And Art, I'm a leader. Like, we have to take our own advice. It is our what happens in your business might not directly be your fault, but it is your responsibility.
Yes.
And so, you know, I think that this is where clinical leadership is critical, is that the hygienists are and team members in general are not ever going to go where the leader isn't willing to take them. So, you know, we were just having a team meeting recently and we were discussing a particular client and they are afraid to hold their team, their hygiene team, accountable to the agreed upon standards of care that the hygiene team helped create. They're afraid to hold them accountable to that because they're afraid they're going to leave. And that is not an unusual situation in practices now. I feel like there are a lot of dental practice owners that are like, yeah, I'm walking on eggshells because I really need a hygienist. And I get that. And look, I've not been in your position. So I'm going to say this with the amount of authority that I have, but there is a limitation, right? I'm not a dentist owning a dental practice, running a dental practice. But what we see is that sometimes there are hygienists in those positions that are not fulfilling the standard of care that is agreed to. So what that means is they're not working with the dentist to help diagnose the patient if they have periodontal disease and getting him to the right treatment. They're not being open to bringing in additional services into hygiene to serve patients. And the dentist is tolerating that. Or even worse, there are team members, not just hygienists, but there are team members in practices that are stirring up drama, that are gossiping, that are bullying other team members. And that is not acceptable. Even if you are in a situation where you're like, I'm afraid I can't find anybody else. That's why you need to always be recruiting.
Yes.
Because then you don't feel so restricted and so fearful of letting somebody go that is damaging the culture of the practice. Because what often happens, as you know, I'm sure you've had a lot of conversations with clients over the years, is then you end up losing a great team member because somebody else is causing a lot of, you know, just wreaking havoc in the practice. So
here's a great story that I have from one of my clients that we actually sold their practice. So when we took the listing, the doctor says, well, you know, here's the deal. My wife is the hygienist and she just does not believe in scaling and root planing.
Wow.
We do none of it. And I said, so doctor, how are you going to translate this to a buyer?
Yeah.
What is a buyer going to say? Well, my wife has these great relationships with the patients. And if she leaves, the whole practice will leave. I said, here's what I do. I go to the buyer and I go, okay, well, you're going to buy this practice and you have a hygienist who doesn't do scaling and replaning, who's exposing you to liability because this is the liability issue.
Yep.
And now you're going to say, wait a minute, I need to do scaling and replaning. Do you fire the doctor's wife? I mean, how does that work? So this is really important, especially doctors, if you're listening. We have a lot of doctors who don't own practices who listen to this. Is you really need to understand what the culture is of the whole hygiene department. Let's talk a little more about this, Rachel. In a lot of offices, I know we have inconsistent execution of diagnosis, treatment philosophies between the doctor and the hygienist. They're just not on the same page. Why is it important to develop written, clear standards of care in the practice? I mean, this is core to what you do, I think, right?
It is core to what we do, and it's core to what dental practices are charged with doing, is giving patients consistent, modern care. So if there are practices that have no periodontal diagnosis protocol, or if you run your perio percentage numbers and you're at, you know, there's really no threshold of perio percentage where you're like, okay, we're good. You know, I mean, I've seen practices at 30% and it's all being carried by perio maintenance. And there are, you know, 2% of patients that are going through active therapy. And then I've also seen practices that are at 5% perio overall, and they've never had a perio program in place. There are patients in your practice with active periodontal disease, and it's not being treated appropriately. Now, it may be the hygienists are doing the best they can in a prophy, but that's not appropriate care for active periodontal disease. And that does create liability. And that is at the core of what we were responsible for as clinical hygienists, is the health of our patient's periodontium, which in turn translates to their overall health. So when we talk about having clear standards of care, it is so that there is a guiding principle that everybody follows, is that these are the diagnostic screenings that we're going to perform, and at what frequency and at what level of completion are we going to perform these? Like, what are all the things that are going to be recorded to be considered a complete periodontal exam, as an example? And then when we see signs of active disease, this is the threshold when we're going to move these patients into something other than a prophy. And so we recommend that be done as a collaborative effort with the clinical leader and the team, particularly the hygienist. And once everybody agrees on what those parameters are and those standards, then it's the responsibility of everyone on the team to follow those, so that every patient, regardless which hygienist they're seeing, is getting the same screenings. They are being looked at in the same way through that same diagnostic eye, that diagnostic filter, and that they're being moved into an appropriate level of care, based on their risk factors, based on their clinical presentation, and based on your treatment philosophy.
But if the doctor doesn't make hygiene and, you know, periodontal therapy a priority in the practice, why would the rest of the team make it a priority, right?
Exactly. And, you know, to your point about that practice that you worked with, we don't see that side of it as often as you do, but I'm glad to be reminded of that, because think about how difficult that's going to be for the buyer coming into that situation.
Impossible.
And there are going to be buyers that are like, no, peace out. I really do not want to fight that battle, that I'm coming in and it's been the doctor and the wife is just been doing undercover periotherapy. And now I've got to convince these patients that not only was the doctor, and no buyer would ever say this, but essentially what's going on in the patient's mind is the doctor was wrong and the doctor's wife was wrong. Like, what else happened here? I'm out.
Well, and that's existing patients. Now you have a new regime, or you get a new hygienist, the old hygienist who basically was a chair filler and didn't do their job. And now you come in. One of the things I've heard, and I might have gotten this from you, because most of my hygiene education, much of it came from you over the years. I've used your stuff in my lectures, and I do give you credit for it. That's how much I respect you.
Thank you.
Is that, you know, we talk to the patients about all of the new data and the new science that's been out, that the links between periodontal disease and heart disease and liver disease and my goldfish dying and all this kind of stuff. And that's one way to say to the patients, listen, this is all new in the last 3 to 5 years, and we really need to have this conversation with you because we're very concerned. I mean, that's one way to get it in there, right?
Yes, Yes, I'm concerned is part of our presentation framework. And that is the perfect way as you're presenting to the patient what your recommendation is. I'm concerned because, you know, I know we've talked about your diabetes and that you've been working really hard to get that under control and you've been having a hard time. Well, we know, and Art, that's an easy example. I mean, we knew that 35 years ago when I was in dental hygiene school, you know, and this oral systemics link thing isn't new, but there is new information coming out all the time that's just confirming this. So the I'm concerned verbal skill is a really great way to tie in the patient's risk factors. Yeah.
Yeah. I take a second, Rachel. And again, folks, I only bring the best of the best onto this podcast. You all know that. We will celebrate our 7th anniversary of this podcast in December. Yeah. Really excited. And I have just made so many wonderful friends around the country who have our consultants and coaches for the dental profession. So inspired hygiene to me is the gold standard of dental hygiene consulting, always has been. Talk a little bit about your company. I want you to give out your contact information and you know what. How can they get a hold of you and all that stuff?
Yeah, sure. So yes, as I mentioned, we started Inspired Hygiene in 2004. So we're going on 22 years next year. And what I'm most proud of is that we have a proven track record of helping teams see results. And results with coaching or consulting are always twofold. You always want to expect a measurable result, whether that is an increase in a particular procedure that you're looking for, an increase in case acceptance, an increase in production, whatever that might be that you're measuring. And so our clients absolutely see that. And then the other thing is you want to see a result in the mindset or the skills of your team. Right? Do they feel more confident presenting treatment? Do they feel more confident answering the phone? Whatever that, you know, topic is. And obviously our topic is primarily focused on the services and procedures and the mindset and the culture of the hygiene department. Now, that being said, at Inspired Hygiene, like you said, Art, 50% of hygiene success happens outside the hygiene department. So that means we've got to also coach the dentist and the admin team and the dental assistants so that everybody is on the same page. They're speaking the same language. They're using the same key terms as the hygienist. It doesn't mean that a business team member needs to like go back to hygiene school. But if that hygienist is now saying, we're going to recommend periodontal therapy instead of a deep cleaning, then everybody on the team should be saying that same word, right? So we include everyone in the team in all of the education that we provide, you know, to really help elevate the hygiene department. So yes, we provide coaching, consulting to help elevate the services that are happening in the hygiene department, clinical services, the systems that help the team implement those services, and that is verbal skill systems, presentation systems, really even the flow of the hygiene exam. And then all of that helps translate to seeing results that are a win for the patients, for the team, the hygienists and the team, and also for the practice. So our website is inspiredhygiene.com. And as I mentioned before, under that free resources, there's a ton of stuff under there, and including a new podcast that we started, the Inspired Hygiene podcast. So you can find it on any of your, you know, popular podcast channels. And also you can reach out to me at Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L at inspiredhygiene.com. I'd love to hear from everybody. And, you know, if you're just curious about how we could help, on our website, you can book a discovery meeting and we have you send a little bit of hygiene data. We do a bit of a mini hygiene data assessment for you. And give you a really good idea of where there might be some opportunity in your hygiene department and how we can help.
Well, I don't need to promote Inspired Hygiene because, again, you are so well respected around the country.
Thank you.
But the one thing that I did see in one of my clients' offices, it's a large fee-for-service practice, is that in your manuals, and by the way, I want you to chat a little bit. You told me before we came on air that you've really upgraded the manuals. I want to hear about that in a second. But one of the things I learned from my client is that every single hygienist who comes into that office has the exact same protocol. So anybody who walks into an office who's working with you is going to go take the patient through the same experience, no matter if their name is Rachel or Susan or Jane or whatever, right?
Yep. Yep. And we teach, we don't teach as much like scripting to where they have to say things exactly the same. We teach more keywords and frameworks so that they, the team can put their own personality with it. But again, they are using the same key terms, right? So if one, so if one person's calling it periodontal therapy, the other person on the team is calling it periodontal therapy because patients get confused very easily, right? They're not living in our world every day like we are. So yes, that is the goal, is to have consistency between the hygienists with level of diagnosis, with level of communication and confidence. And that also translates, Art, not only to periodontal diagnosis, but also to how the hygienists are helping tee up treatment for the doctors. So when doctor comes in, she, you know, knows that she's going to hear the same information given in roughly the same way by each hygienist when she enters to do that exam. And that if there's a restorative need, that there's a photo of that need that's up there, the hygienists have already kind of pre-framed the patient and prepared them to hear that from the doctor. And that makes those exams, those doctor exams, if there are hygienists listening, it makes them go way faster and smoother. And for doctors, it takes some pressure off of you to, you know, leave a really intense procedure, go in to do this hygiene exam. And, you know, it's hard to assess everything in 3 to 5 minutes and then give the patient that diagnosis. Is your hygiene team can really help you with that if they are calibrated with your treatment philosophy and if they're given those tools and skills and coaching to really develop the confidence to be able to do that.
Consistency is a big deal.
It is.
Now, I know that you use a term, we would call them the four R's that you want to see every hygiene team to be. So I want to hit those because I found those really interesting. I think these will be really informative for our audience. Let's start with relationship. Talk about the importance of hygienists building relationships with patients and maybe some tips on how we do that.
Yeah. And I love that you pulled this up, Art. Like this is, we're digging deep into the Inspired Hygiene Archives.
250 podcasts I've learned how to prepare. or we just kind of make it up as we go along, whatever works.
I love it. I love it. No, you're very prepared. Yes. Yeah, so these are really the areas that the hygienist can have just such a huge impact in, obviously, relationships. I mean, I think this is really where hygienists shine. You know, and this is something that I think as a profession, so many of us really enjoy is that building relationships with our patients. And one of the things that I learned years ago from Dr. Bruce Baird with Productive Dentist Academy, we'll give them a little shout out, was links.
Excellent.
He uses the term links, or linking is like, hey, can we find two or three links between the doctor and this patient? So it could be, you know, the kids go to the same school or both their kids play soccer or, you know, maybe they have some similar interest or they went to a similar or they went to the same school or, you know, something like that. Where can we find links that we can then communicate to the doctor to help them build a relationship quickly? I think hygienists are really good at, you know, building those personal relationships, making note of, and or honestly, purely just remembering things that patients have said to them from time to time. Now, I was with the practice last week that we have worked with for over 15 years, and they have a couple new hygienists that just joined their team, and they brought us back in. And one of these new hygienists said, she's like, you know, one thing I realized after going through your Perio Protocol online bootcamp was I've been doing a lot of chit chat, and I need to transition that chit chat into how do I make it more about the patient and their overall health. So she was spending a lot of time just talking about, you know, current events or the weather or, you know, the wedding that, you know, the patient just went to or that kind of thing. She's really now learning how to transition that into, hey, that's awesome. I'm glad you had such a great time and the wedding went off without a hitch. Now, let's take a look. Do you have any concerns for me? Like, has anything changed since you were here last? You know, so really kind of directing it back to why is the patient there to begin with? And the other thing on relationships is we can really build relationships with what we know about the patients and their health. So when you ask a patient, you know, what was your last HbA1c? I know you've really been working on, you know, managing your diabetes. That builds relationship. And by the way, it gives us a clue into how healthy the patient might be or the inflammatory burden that they might be carrying. Oh. That also leads us into the next R, which is retention. You okay if I go on with that?
Yep,
okay.
Absolutely.
All right. So with retention, this is all about like giving the patient something specific that you're going to focus on that next visit. So again, if I'm asking Art, because I know Art or my patient Art, maybe not you Art, but if my patient Art has diabetes, right, is when I ask Art, what was your last HbA1c? I can say, you know what, I'm going to ask you that again next time. Because you're going through, you know, you're going to go through periodontal therapy and I'm expecting that number to be better. So now we've tied something very specific to our patient to the treatment that we're recommending. So the more that we can make it very specific to them, the more we're going to retain patients in treatment that we recommend and also just in our practice.
Well, I'll tell you what, and I'm going to violate a HIPAA rule on myself right now. About 3 years ago, my doctor told me, did you know that we have a problem? Your A1C is 7.6.
Oh my God.
And I said, now I have a pretty high medical dental IQ. And I said, I didn't know what A1C was. He says, you are now pretty much type 2 diabetic. I said, nope. How do we fix this? And I'm one of these rare humans that can just flip a switch. I stopped eating sugar, literally.
Wow.
And got my A1C in about 6 to 9 months down to 6. It's right about where it is, and lost 30 pounds. So this is a big deal. And I have seen people who abuse the privilege of being diabetic and they lose limbs. I have family members who have done that. It's so this is very, very important. So mm-hmm. We talked about retention. How about reputation? I was at a restaurant recently, and I had like the best experience with a server. She couldn't have been nicer. Whatever I needed, she came over. She was great. I thought so much about it. I went and told the manager how good she was. And so talk about reputation, how important that is, how it drives referrals, and you're done with the practice's online presence.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I didn't know that about you, Art. So that's kind of cool that example came up.
Oh,
and
no.
Yeah. And you just confirmed how important that is to you and important for your dental provider to know that about you, because it has a direct impact on how you respond to dental procedures and what they're seeing in your mouth and your gum tissues and all of that. And so, again, I think that example translates to reputation as well. Like, does this practice have a reputation for, you know, just caring about me as a whole person? And does this dental practice, how do we build that reputation for, you know, being a center for overall health? And it really, the reputation comes down to consistency with customer care, right? So are the patients getting the same level of care across all the providers? And one of the things that I teach a lot is your patients don't know how well you're taking care of them unless you tell them. So they do not know when you're pulling their tongue aside, they don't know that you're doing an oral cancer screening. It's so interesting to me how sometimes as dental providers, we just think everybody knows this, but they do not know. They don't know when you're telling them to say, and you're looking at the back of their throat that you're doing an oral cancer screening, you know, or that you're evaluating their airway. So tell your patients what you're doing. And they're like, wow. I mean, they're going to talk about that when they go back to work. They're going to say, yeah, they looked at my airway and noticed that, you know, this might have something to do with why I snore so much. You know, my wife's been complaining about this and I'm actually going to do an at-home sleep study. And the dental practice is like on it. You know, my primary care doctor hadn't even mentioned this to me. So those are the things that when you go above and beyond, it builds your reputation. And when there's consistency between the providers around that, then it really gives patients the impression that this is a practice that is really like they're on it. right? They're extremely thorough. They care about me as a whole person, and they're making this very specific and personal to me.
Okay. So the fourth one is referrals. Now I should have gone into marketing instead of accounting because I love marketing and sales and all that stuff. I know you have four things that you talk about that make dental practices, quote, referable. Talk about those things.
Yes. And I learned these from Dan Sullivan, who's the founder of Strategic Coach. And so a lot of y'all might know of Strategic Coach. I learned these and I was like, this applies perfectly to a dental practice, right? So he says there are four things that make a business referable. Number one is stay on time. So, I mean, how more perfect is that than a dental practice? And that alone, if you are a practice that the patient is sitting in the reception area for no more than 3 to 5 minutes, assuming they come right within that window of their appointment and you're seating them, they're going to go back and tell that, you know, they're like, yeah, I never have to wait. They get me in there on time. They get me out on time. And they, you know, it's a big deal. So number one is stay on time. Number two is do what you say you're going to do. So if you say, hey, you know what? I'm going to call your periodontist because maybe this patient's alternating, or I'm going to send your periodontist a note about your visit today, then do it, right? Do it and make sure that the patient knows that you completed that. So, hey, you know, maybe you send an email and you copy the patient on it. I just want to let you know, Art's doing really well. His diabetes is under control and his gums are looking so much better. It's amazing, you know, how those two things go together. So do what you say you're going to do. Doctors, if you say you're going to call and check on a patient, then you've got to do it. Third is finish what you start. So I think an example of this is something like, you know, if you're going to doctors, if you're going to have an interdisciplinary, you know, treatment planning session with an oral surgeon and an orthodontist or something like that, like take that to completion, finish what you start there and let the patient know that you all have met and, you know, that you're moving forward with this treatment. That's just an example of that. I would say finish what you start is also, you know, for hygienists, if you start that periodontal examination, you know, complete that by sharing that with the doctor during that handoff, during that hygiene exam. Like you're bringing that whole thing full circle so that doctor's aware, patient's aware, and you're helping the patient say yes to treatment. And then the last one is super simple, and it is saying please and thank you. Yep. Thank your patients for coming in. You know, thank you for coming in today. We so appreciate your business and thank you so much for sending your friends and family. So just say please and thank you. These are simple things that we can do and that as a team, you can really you can really impact referrals for sure.
You know, it's funny. I you may or may not go back this far because you're much younger than I am. Everybody's much younger than I am, but Jennifer D. St. George, did you know Jenny?
Yes, yes.
So Jenny taught me 35 years ago that the three most, and it's probably still that important today, the three most important things that a patient takes into account as to whether they're going to continue to come to your office and they're going to refer their friends is a friendly staff, a painless dentist, and a dentist that runs on time.
Yeah.
Like you said.
Yeah.
So Those are the three things really
important. Pride and
all
truth.
Right, we're required by law to talk numbers, Rachel, or we can't have this podcast because I'm a CPA and you know that. So let's talk some percentages. And I know that every office is different. If it's a big reconstructive prosthodontic office, the percentages are different than it's an HMO office. So, but just in general,
sure.
What percentage of the hygiene production is compared to doctor production in a general practice? I know these things probably haven't changed much over the years, but kind of talk about what you see in that area.
Yeah, I would say the range has expanded. So where I think dental CPAs really liked it to be in that 30% range. Yeah. I would say now it's 20 to 30%. Again, Art, with the caveat, if this is a high in restorative where they're doing a ton of all on X cases and you know, that kind of thing, it is hard for hygiene to keep up with that from a production standpoint. However, so I'll say on the lower end, we always are encouraging our listeners, our audiences, our clients to expand hygiene services. I will make a blanket statement that it is extremely difficult now for a hygiene department to be profitable if the majority of their procedures are solely adult prophys and bite wings.
Right. Especially if they are on PPOs, which we're discounting 40%. Yeah. And I have been making a 7-year campaign, Doctors for You. It is always a good time to visit your relationship with insurance. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that you walk in tomorrow and drop all your PPOs. We call that Russian roulette professional suicide. We didn't do that. But you know, it's kind of hard when the hygiene salaries have gone up since the pandemic, what, 10 to 20%, maybe more? I don't
know. At least. And you're in Southern California. So I would say that the average hygienist in Southern California is probably making anywhere between $60 and $80 an hour.
Yeah.
And
about right.
And if your PPO plan is reimbursing you $68 on a pro fee and, you know, $44 on bite wings, you're going to be going in the hole. So it is you must consider additional hygiene services because number one, not a prophy and bite wings is not appropriate care for every patient. It's just like if a dentist were only doing one surface occlusal composites, that's not appropriate care to address decay on the distal, right? So if all your hygienists are doing are prophys, that's not appropriate care to address if they have periodontal disease. So number one, looking at really getting clear on diagnostics and using, well, I'll get to that from a clinical standpoint in just a moment, but looking at your service mix, there are also a lot of really effective adjunct services now, whether it's lasers or PerioProtect or local antimicrobials or things like that, that can really enhance the results that patients see, help them stay in a healthy state longer. It's really important to consider those things. And that can really, as a result, help with that hygiene production percentage.
Absolutely. All right, so let's dig a little deeper into that. Now we're going to talk about in that 20 to 30% of the practice revenues that comes from the hygiene department. What percentage of that needs to be, or in your opinion, you know, needs to be in the 4,000 codes, the 4910s and all that kind of stuff?
Roughly 30% or more.
Yep.
And what I would say is, again, don't just rest on your laurels. We actually have a perio percentage calculator tool on our website that people can use for free. Cool. And look at it, not only the percentage, but also look at when you print out your numbers from your practice management software, you know, are you doing, if you're at 25% perio and you're doing 100 perio maintenance per month, but you're doing 10 scaling root plantings per month, you're at 20% because your perio maintenance is carrying that percentage.
Right.
So really look at all aspects of those codes and see, are we well represented with all of those codes, or are we heavy in one area or another? And that'll give you a clue as to where you might want to focus. So what I find is that practices that maybe they had a hygiene coach years ago, they tend to have a lot of patients in periodontal maintenance, but unless they have continually invested in education and reinforcing those protocols, a lot of times the diagnosis into active therapy falls off a cliff. So just because you might be at 30%, that doesn't necessarily mean you don't have room to refine that even more.
A couple more things for you, Rachel, because again, we could go days, you and I. Some of the biggest mistakes you've seen dental offices making in their hygiene program?
I would say we kind of covered this one, was not expanding services and just kind of sticking, you know, where they are. The other thing I would say too is one thing we see pretty frequently right now is practices that are booked months out. And this is it is not an easy problem to solve because sometimes they're maxed out on their facility, right? They don't have any additional space.
No space.
You have,
no.
To, yeah, you have to get creative, or maybe they've been looking for a hygienist for months and they have another operatory, but they just need someone to come in and help them see those patients. But I would say right now, if you know that you have a lot of patients that need periodontal therapy and they can't get in, go on out to where you have space. And even if you put a couple blocks a week in your schedule for scaling root planning, go ahead and do that now. Because you can always, you know, your patients need that care. They need that care. And it is a tricky situation. We've helped a lot of teams through that. There's no one magic bullet answer to resolving that issue, but there are several things that you can do to get creative that will help increase your capacity of your hygiene department a bit. So I would say that the mistake is just relying on that prophy and bite wings, like not expanding services and then not really looking with a lot of honesty in where you are with your scheduling capacity and making changes to address that. I think those are two of the big ones right now. And then the other big one, and this one is a little controversial, but it just has to be said, is dental practice owners that are afraid and are allowing some hygienists, this is not happening everywhere, but this is happening, to blatantly not follow the standard of care or to just be creating toxic culture upsets in the practice and not addressing it because they're afraid of not having a hygienist.
Yeah, I mean, your weakest link is the one team member that everybody dreads seeing every day. And I can't tell you how many offices where I have this conversation. I mean, I'm not just a tax and accounting guy. I'm a psychiatrist, psychologist, marriage therapist. I mean, whatever. You are too, right? And I can't tell you how many times I've had a doctor who said, you know, Art, I finally listened to you. I got rid of that toxic person in my office. And you have no idea how much more wonderful it is to come into work every day. And yes, you will find somebody. And if you don't find somebody and you say to the team, listen, I'm looking at letting XYZ employee go. And they're all going to say, listen, doc, we're behind you. We've wanted you to do that forever. You knew you had to do it. I'm glad you came to your senses.
Yeah.
We as a team will rally behind you and we'll get through this. So
yeah, they will.
Yeah.
They will. And your culture is only going to be as good as your team relationships and your team there. I could say this in a more eloquent way, but your culture is never going to get any better if you have somebody that's constantly stirring the pot and causing drama. Yes. And, you're likely not going to hire someone for that position while they're still in it. So, you know, free up the space. And that's another reason to kind of circle back to where we started, Art, was always be recruiting.
Yep, that's a good idea. Last thing for you, Rachel, where do you see dental hygiene in dentistry in the next 5 to 10 years? What changes do you see on the horizon?
Yeah, I see much more integration of technology and AI is going to be absolutely necessary for dental team members to embrace. I do not believe that AI is going to replace dentists or dental hygienists. We still need that clinical skill and judgment that comes from human discernment. We're going to need that. However, there's so many pieces of technology that can save time, that can create more effective communication with patients. So I think we're going to have to really embrace some of those things and really further integrate them. The other thing I would say, too, is there are states that are expanding the scope of practice for dental assistants to include scaling. And I don't think that that's something that can be ignored by hygienists and hygiene associations. It's certainly not being ignored, by the National Hygiene Association. But I think what we've got to really look at is there an opportunity to use that to our advantage, particularly in practices where you're really booked out? It might be great if the hygienist has screened this patient and knows that they are indeed healthy and the dental assistant can take some of that work on. So I think that's something that we've got to really pay close attention to and just really hygienist bringing that value that only you can bring will help preserve our profession. And then looking at some of these changes is, okay, if this is happening now, like, how do we use that to our advantage? How do we use this to maybe get out of the scheduling backlog that we're in? And if you can control the standards of care in that type of environment where a hygienist and an assistant is working together and you have really clear protocols for making sure that the patients that those assistants see are truly healthy, then I think it can work. If not, then it can absolutely create more problems. So I think we're just going to have to just embrace that we are evolving and we're going to have to be flexible and we're going to have to look at where we are today rather than looking back.
And change is inevitable. I was talking, your good friend and my good friend, Kevin Henry, was on the podcast a couple months ago. And we were having the same conversation about scaling. And the bottom line is, doctors, you need to check with your state board and your state dental societies. And they have resources to make sure that you do not get in trouble. Rachel Wall, one more time, tell everybody if you and folks, you know, if you just feel like something isn't right, hygiene department isn't right, your hygienist isn't right, your patients are not getting the care and the love that you think they need to get, give this nice lady a call, because I'll tell you what, I've worked with Rachel for over 20 years and it doesn't get any better than Rachel Wall Inspired Hygiene. Again, I don't get paid a dime to say any of this. This is a fact. So Rachel, how do we get a hold of you?
Yeah, I would say just go to our website, inspiredhygiene.com. You'll even see, some fantastic testimonials from hygienists. So yes, there's room to elevate hygiene department in almost every practice. And our goal is to also help the hygienists feel motivated and engaged and feel fulfilled in their career too. So this is we want to help you create a win for your patients, for your team, and for the practice. So just reach out, let's have a conversation, no strings attached. The other thing I would say is just check out our podcast. You'll get a really good sense of our philosophy within the first couple episodes. So check that out as well, the Inspired Hygiene Podcast. We'd love to have you give us a listen. And Art, thank you so much as always for having me on. Always appreciate it and enjoy it.
Well, hang with me as I take the podcast out for a minute or two or three or however long it takes me to take the podcast out. Folks, I want to thank you again for the honor and the privilege of your time. See, I use thank you, right, Rachel? Is that what I use? There we go. I'm learning. I learn every single time I listen to somebody who's smarter than I am. Again, I want to thank my wonderful sponsor, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com, 140 continuing education courses at a very, very reasonable price and the best clinical content you're ever going to find. Go to www.decisionsindentistry.com. If you are looking for a dental CPA, iBailey has your back. We work with almost 1,000 dental practices across our offices. Myself, Don Watson, Scott Haberman, Henry Assatorian, the whole team. This is all we do every single day is work with dentists and people like Rachel who know their special areas. Call me 657-279-3243 or A. Wiederman. That's AWIEDERMAN at iBailey.com. Please download and subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends about it. We're going to have a podcast coming up here on year end tax planning, one on in important life and disability insurances that you need for you and your family. And I got a lot of really cool stuff planned for 2026, which I will be very excited to share with you. But not today. I think that is about it. So Rachel Wall, Inspired Hygiene, www.inspiredhygiene.com. Thanks for being on. And folks, a couple more things. I didn't mention this at the beginning. February 28th, we are doing a live transition seminar at Dave & Buster's in the city of Orange. If you're in Southern California, we have a dental consultant, a dental attorney, financial planner. My good friends at Bank of America Practice Solutions are sponsoring. We're going to have a dental marketing company. We're going to have all kinds of folks to talk to you about everything and anything you need to know. Again, email me if you would like to participate. It's sponsored by four of our wonderful local dental societies. And again, if you're in Chicago, come see me at the Midwinter. Bring a coat because it's cold. And I'll be there. That's the week of February 19th through the 21st. With that said, that will do it for this episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. Again, please subscribe to the to the podcast and tell your friends. And we will see you next time. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. The Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast is produced by Ide Bailey in partnership with Art Wiederman, CPA, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, and the Academy of Dental CPAs. For audience questions and feedback, email Art Wiederman, awiederman@idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. Or you may call Art at 657-279-3243.